The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2014 Annual Conference, copyright 2014. If you have purchased this recording, you are free to make multiple copies for your school's use. You may not sell copies of the audio or post copies on the internet. Order additional conference recordings from this year's conference or previous conferences at store.accsedu.org. Find out more about the Association of Classical and Christian Schools at www.accsedu.org. Thank you.
Just use this one. I welcome you this afternoon. My name is Lynn Gibson. I am from Spokane, Washington, and I represent the Oaks Classical Christian Academy. And I thank you for coming today. I really hope this is a beneficial workshop for you, and I'm going to put a lot of content into this workshop. So I ask that you'll maybe save your questions for the last 10 minutes or so. If you haven't already received them, there are three handouts on the back table that you can pick up. And then I also have some of my favorite go-to resources for you to look at. So I thank you for coming. So for my knowledge, how many of you are currently in some kind of a role of a college advisor at your high school or a guidance counselor? One, two, three, great. And how many of you are administrators, school administrators? Okay. And then any board members in here? Great. Good, so welcome. Okay. Well, I'm going to lead us in prayer first, and then we will get started. So, welcome. All right, will you please join me in prayer? Merciful God, I thank you for this day and the opportunity to share what you have given me to share. Lord, I thank you for each person in this room and for the work they are doing in your name. I commend this next hour to you and ask that my words would be of you and for you. It is for you and for you alone that we all labor, not for the praise of man. May your spirit now pervade every word of my presentation, I ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, I'm going to start with a little family picture. Last Saturday, we just graduated my second son from college, and it was a wonderful occasion, and it reaffirmed my conviction that college can be a formative and amazing experience in the life of a student. My son began college 4 years ago as a boy, and he graduated last week as a young man, and God carried him through those 4 years with four strong, godly men who mentored him. He plugged into a vibrant church. Fortunately, he became gainfully employed through an internship, and he starts in 2 weeks. And most of what I wanted to convey was that he learned as much in his 4 years outside of the classroom as he learned in the classroom. All three of my children, they are all adult children now, and they all have their own college journeys where God has matured them in numerous ways. And thankfully, he has favored them with employment after college, which I know isn't always a given. So I get very passionate about speaking about college, and that means that talking to you within an hour is going to be a little challenging, but I will try. My goal today is to cast a vision for you of what a guidance program might look like at your school and how it might benefit your school. My goal today is to fly at about a 35,000-foot altitude by giving you a lot of content rather than tiny details. And then I'm willing to stay after and chat with any one of you. I am willing to meet with you one-on-one during this conference if you want to schedule some time. My business card's in the back with my email, and I also have my contact information on the last page of the slides of this presentation. These are some of the programs that I have created at my school regarding my guidance program, and I'm not going to go over them today, but if any one of those is particularly interesting to you, I would be happy to talk about it on your own time. But again, my goal today is to just kind of cast a broader net. Let me give you a little background on myself. My husband and I have spent 18 years in classical education at the Oaks Classical Christian Academy in Spokane. We have sent all three of our children there from K through 12, and they have all graduated. My husband served as a board member there for 15 years, and I have been in my position as the director of college counseling for 7 years, so I'm going on my 8th year. And let me tell you a little bit about the scope of my position. The scope of my position is to help families plan for college. I do not do traditional counseling in my position. I do not take part in student disciplinary issues. And I do not assist with prospective family admissions to the Oaks. So the scope of my job is intentionally limited to college guidance and preparation. I am paid for 20 hours a week, salaried half-time position, but it is very challenging to complete my work in that given time. So I must say I work nights and weekends as the students need my help. I find that not to be a chore, but a privilege. But it's also become, I'm an empty nester, so I do have that, I'm afforded that time. It is an extremely rewarding position because I see God move constantly in the lives of my students. There are 85 students in our secondary program, and I mainly work with seniors, and they comprise about 20 to 24 students per senior class. So my job is not to convince families to send their children to college. My job is not to convince families to send their children to college. College is not for every student. God calls each student to a specific vocation. And each calling, each vocation requires unique preparation. So I've seen God clearly call some of my students to liberal arts, small liberal arts Christian colleges. I've seen him call others to large public universities, some to Ivy League schools, some to service academies such as West Point and the United States Naval Academy. Some go to culinary school, some to film and theater institutes, some to technical colleges. The bottom line is that I believe that God wants students to make an impact for his kingdom in all these arenas. And as Doug Wilson said this morning, I really appreciated it, his people fan across the globe and create something by speaking. My job is to come alongside our families and help them with whatever they have decided is their goal for their child in the next step after college, by God's direction. So at the Oaks, we have just graduated our 12th senior class. I think that makes 115 or so graduates from the Oaks. And we definitely have a college-going mentality at the Oaks. Roughly 100% of our students matriculate into some college or university across the country or internationally. Now, we did not intentionally set out to create this college-going mentality, but I have found that students are kind of the instigator of that mentality as they come back and they share their experiences of college, and that excitement passes on to the next class. I also think it makes sense because families who have invested in a K through 12 classical education obviously love lifelong learning, and they're often very excited to continue that lifelong learning for their child, and the next step, logically, is college. In the same way that the quadrivium follows the trivium, many of our Oaks families want to continue the momentum of this lifelong learning for their children, and college is that step. And this is definitely how my husband and I have viewed college for our three children. We've wanted them to continue this process of a rigorous education through college. And I believe in the value of a college education. Why does college matter? Well, we as a nation are increasingly moving toward a knowledge-based economy, which makes college education a necessity in some ways. And sometimes it's becoming a requirement, even for entry-level manufacturing positions. My job is increasingly becoming relevant in our school because college is becoming increasingly necessary. What do I mean by a knowledge-based economy? Well, increasingly, the goods and services in the United States rely more on the minds of American workers than on their muscle. Because we live in a knowledge-based economy, college education is becoming a baseline requirement for employment in this country. The demographics say that by 2020, 65% of all jobs will require some post-secondary education. In today's highly automated factories, many manufacturers demand the equivalent of an associate's degree, a two-year degree, even for entry-level workers. One researcher said that the wealth of nations is no longer in resources, and it's no longer in physical capital, but in human capital. I'm going to go back to that. And this is where I really feel the classical Christian model has a big advantage. We are producing the kinds of students that universities and employers are desperately seeking for. Colleges and employers want students with a moral compass. They want students with integrity. They want students who believe that plagiarism is wrong. That's one of the most common problems going on now in the secular university across the country. They want students with a strong set of abilities to think creatively, to solve problems independently, to speak persuasively, to write effectively, and to learn independently. Our ACCS students can make a significant impact in this knowledge-based economy. So I believe there are many benefits of a guidance program to the school and to the student. And what I've done is basically take my tasks and divide them into two very large kind of umbrella categories. My position is essentially divided into these two categories, advise and advocate. And I find that anyone in my position can have a tremendous impact upon the student and the school if these tasks are done with excellence. Now, at no point in this presentation do I tend to toot my own horn. I have simply taken advantage of the opportunities afforded me in my role as a college guidance counselor. And God has shown me favor just by stepping out and taking advantage of those opportunities that come with the role. So some of the ways I advise. First of all, the college search and application process is extremely complex. It is so much more complex than when I applied to college, a few years ago. And it's probably more complex than you ever remember. I don't even remember asking my parents much about it. And we certainly didn't think about a college that's a fit, which I will talk about in a few minutes. It's become so complex that if you go into a bookstore, there's an entire section dedicated to college admissions. So my job is to help families deal with this level of complexity. And I find that families are often fearful of the process because it's such a foreign territory to them. They're unfamiliar with it, and they're unfamiliar with the entire lexicon of terms that go with the college application and admissions process. So my job is to help families navigate through this foreign territory. So I have provided, as one of my handouts, and in case you just walked in, there are some handouts on the back table, three different handouts. One of my handouts is the top 20 questions that I'm asked by students and families at our school. I've specifically not given you the answers to those because they often are dependent upon our school and our region, but I wanted to give you the questions because to have someone at your school able to answer those questions is extremely comforting to families, and it's beneficial to the school. It's beneficial to our office staff and our teachers and our headmaster, because when parents address those questions to those three groups of people, they can direct those questions directly to me. So I become kind of the clearinghouse for all questions having to do with college, and it doesn't have to burden down the rest of our staff. So the advising part of my job is done through several ways, and I'm going to list them here. First of all, I can help students and guide them in the right courses to take. Our students pretty much don't get a chance to select their courses until senior year, and then 8 out of 10 of their courses are optional. We only have 2 required courses senior year. And so students want to know, which courses should I take, how many should I take, what do the colleges care that I take, if I'm going into this major, what would be good preparation. So I find that that's really handy to be able to advise them in this way. Secondly, I provide resources for standardized testing preparation. Now, I do not do standardized test prep, but for better or for worse, standardized testing is here to stay in our country. And whether we agree with it or don't agree with it, it is the one standard criteria that colleges use to evaluate an applicant over many, many different learning environments. So even though it's one of maybe 8 to 10 criteria that they use to evaluate an applicant, it is still a very important criteria. There are a lot of online free college prep tools that I direct my students to, so they don't necessarily have to go and pay for standardized test prepping. I assist with college application completion and meeting of deadlines. This is where the parent starts to love someone in this role, because as a third party, I can be the taskmaster. I can get after their kids, and the parents then move into a role more of supportive cheerleader. And I can get after the kids and say, the Oaks has never missed a deadline, and I don't want you to be the first. So, and they're really good about listening to me because I'm not their mom. So I can really help them not only understand how to apply to colleges, but get those applications done on time. Oh, and by the way, before I go to the next one, several of the components of a college application are really the responsibility of the school to put forward. Now, that doesn't take the responsibility away from the student. The student has to make sure that the school is putting forward those documents. But what I'm talking about is that it's the school's responsibility to send the official student transcript to the college. And it's the school's responsibility to send a teacher evaluation to the college on time. And it's the school's responsibility to send what is called the counselor report on time. And so there are parts of the college application that I want to see done with excellence and completed on time, because that makes an impression on the college that our school is on the game and we're going to be hitting the deadlines. My favorite part of my job is to help brainstorm college essay ideas with students. And I have a background of 20 years in journalism, so I love reading what they write and helping them edit those essays into carefully polished works of art. No typos is pretty much the main mantra they hear me say. Another way that I assist students is by locating scholarships and financial aid. There's a lot of money out there for scholarships, but it is really hard to find. It's especially hard for families to find because they don't know where to look. They don't know the websites. They don't know the resources. And constantly, every week, I get scholarships in my inbox. And it's just a matter of me, again, being a clearinghouse and disseminating those opportunities to different students. And some apply and win those scholarships, and that's really exciting. I help families identify colleges that are the right fit for their students' goals. And I will talk a little bit later about what the idea of a school that is a fit really means. I encourage students to discover their strengths and their career aspirations. My students love taking a career assessment test that I give them, where I ask them 70 questions that help them determine their temperament. And their temperament then guides them to some categories of careers that might be a fit for them. And that's really illuminating for these students. I also help them to tell their story. The college application is only one shot for them to tell their story to a complete group of strangers at a college or university. And I love that Doug Wilson said today that we must be storytellers. We are imitators of God's story. And once these students figure out what their story is, and sometimes it just takes a little bit of questioning and gleaning, then they're able to write their story in essays and make their whole application a coherent story of their lives, their character, their goals, their experiences. And then they take their stories onto the college campus. I work with families to remove the complexity from the college search and admissions process. And this is pretty much the main thing that I do. Parents call me, they just have questions. I alleviate their concerns. I tell them they're on the right track. No, they haven't forgotten to do anything. They need to wait a little longer to get an admissions reply. Everything's going to be fine. Often my job is a lot of hand-holding and encouragement. Well, that's the advisory part of my job, and now we'll go on to the advocacy part of my job. The guidance counselor at a high school is in the unique position of being able to advocate for a student in several ways. And this is a great privilege. So I get to represent our school to the college community. I want colleges to fully understand what we are doing in educating our students classically and Christianly. Some colleges and universities have never heard of classical education. Some don't know what the trivium is. And so I find it a privilege to invite them on our campus, give them a tour, have them sit in on our classes, and really explain to them the kind of student that will graduate from our school and the tools in their tool belt that they're going to have as they go on into college and into life. I also act as a primary communication link between our high school and the colleges and universities. So often, colleges or universities, if they have a question about a student, they need someone at a school that they can call. They just need a point person. And the headmaster doesn't necessarily have the time or the bandwidth. The school secretaries don't. The teachers certainly don't have the time. And so I can fill that role as kind of the point person. I am the primary communication link. I've had college admissions counselors call me after they've admitted some of our students and say, "Lynn, do you think that your student might be a good candidate for our honors program at our college?" And they can ask me that, and I can clearly talk about the student with them. Some others call me and say, "Do you think your student would be a good candidate for a special leadership scholarship that we offer that's by invitation only?" and I can talk to them about that. We are very much in partnership, and they're expecting me to give honest answers to their questions, and it's a very collaborative relationship. One thing I can do in my advocacy is to host college admission advisors, college reps, onto our campus. And so every fall, I have about 20 different college reps come onto our campus during our lunch period and tell the students about their schools. And wow, this has been really eye-opening for students who perhaps had never considered that school, and something about the school or program really excites them. And for the first time, they think, hey, that's cool, I'm going to look into that. It also gives the college admissions advisors an opportunity to see our students face-to-face. And that is a tremendous, tremendous benefit as they're staring at a paper application or an online application. I cultivate relationships with admission counselors. I take this part of my role very seriously. I call them, I get to know them, I spend time with them. I want to find out what kind of student they're looking for. And again, as I said, they look to me as a collaborative partner as well. And so I found these relationships to be very, very helpful. I make phone calls on a student's behalf. Colleges, interestingly enough, even though parents pay the bills, colleges don't want to hear from parents, because for some reason they think parents might be biased toward their students. Now, I learned this my first year with my daughter. Before I was in this position, there was no one in my position at the Oaks, and so I took it upon myself to be my daughter's advocate. But every time I called a college, they said, we don't want to speak with you as a parent. We'd like to either speak with your daughter or your guidance counselor. They really view the guidance counselor as a third-party objective person. So I've been able to make phone calls on my students' behalf for various things. One student hadn't heard an admission decision yet, and she knew that they had already gone out in the mail. And it turned out that her case was kind of sitting on the back burner. And when I called the dean of admissions and talked to him about this girl and what I really thought she would add to their university, what she would bring, what she was like, he agreed to admit her on the spot through my phone call. And that was really, really rewarding. Again, it's not because of what I'm capable of doing as much as what I'm just stepping into in my role, what I'm afforded to do in this position. I also advocate for my students by providing official school transcripts and letters of recommendation. This is perhaps one of my favorite parts of my job. It's also the most time-consuming. Words matter. In fact, colleges say that the letter of recommendation is the most underutilized tool in the applicant's arsenal. Teachers and counselors have no idea how much weight colleges put on letters that have been carefully and personally written about a student, someone who knows that student, who speaks directly to their character and how they contribute to the high school, and how they've grown, and how they've failed, and how they've learned from their failures. So I spend about an hour and a half per letter, and it's about 2 pages long, and I really make it as authentic as possible. Doug Wilson said that we are the builder of worlds when we use words. And I've really seen that words matter. Words in my position for students hold a lot of weight. Another way that I advocate is I explain the high school rigor, the culture, and our curriculum to the college advisor, the college admissions committees. Imagine that they are comparing our small classical Christian school with dozens and dozens of other different learning environments all over the country. They need someone to cut through the noise and kind of decipher what our school is all about. And that is my position. I've also been able to appeal to financial aid departments on a family's behalf. We had a family a month ago. They were short $8,000 in being able to send their student to a school that he really felt was the fit school for him. And so I helped them write what's called a special circumstances letter to explain a lot of different issues in their family's life that the financial aid department had not been privy to. And because I knew what the financial aid department was looking for and the kind of data that they were seeking, I was able to help this family craft this letter. And it ended up providing this family enough money, $2,000 to $4,000 per year in extra grant aid for the student to attend that school. Again, they look for help from the high school guidance counselors to really help families with these financial aid appeals. And finally, I advocate for a student's position off the wait list to admittance. More and more, colleges and universities, especially the selective schools, are using the wait list as an enrollment management tool. So they will under-admit students, and then they will put lots of students on the wait list and be able to pull from the wait list one by one as they need to fill up their freshman class. But as you can imagine, if you had 100 students on the wait list and all they are names to you, you wouldn't know if your institution is that student's number one choice or number eight choice. And so, along with a student, I get on the phone and we advocate from May 1st all the way through June, and we say, and I can say to them, at least in this case, which was this past month, your institution is this student's number one school. It's been his number one school since last August. And I promise you that if you admit him off the wait list, he will enroll in your school tomorrow. And they want that promise of enrollment because, again, they're really at that last month trying to just manage their enrollment and fill up their freshman class without oversubscribing their freshman class. So I called, I explained that to him. That student was admitted off the wait list and admitted the next day. So often they just need someone to cut through the noise, to give them a little bit more information about a student. Now granted, each one of these tasks takes time, but each can reap huge benefits. I have a pennant on the wall of my office for every college that one of my students has matriculated into. And not only do I remember to pray for those students at those colleges, but every one of those pennants reminds me of a student and a story, and how I was privileged to be involved in that story through my advocacy. So now I want to talk about the components of a strong guidance program. Creating a strong school program of any kind doesn't happen by chance. So there are three areas that I have focused on at the Oaks to make our program as strong as possible, and I'm always looking for ways to improve upon it. And I call these the three R's. So the first R is building relationships. The extent to which I can advocate for my student and advise them well is the extent to which I can build relationships. These relationships must be with students and parents, teachers and coaches, college admission officers, other guidance counselors, and scholarship organizations in our community. In the college world, I am the face of our school, and I must represent us well as unto the Lord. So this is a relationship-intensive role. And some ways that I build relationships is I meet with students and parents in a fairly systematic way beginning junior year. I call these student-family consultations. and I just make sure that I'm on the same page with the families regarding their goals. Another thing I do that I've already mentioned, I host about 20 college visits to our school in the fall during the lunch period so that they can meet us and our students can meet them. Another thing I do is get to know our teachers and coaches because they often know the student in a much better and different context than I will ever know that student. And so by getting to know them, they help me to write a better letter of recommendation for that student. And I get involved with college-related organizations in our city and nationally. I belong to a national association that has helped me gain experience and expertise with the college admissions process. The second R is resources. To do my job with excellence, I must become an expert on where to find information. Information from associations, from websites, from books, and from people. This is a vital part of creating a strong guidance program, but it does take time. In fact, my first year, I knew so little. I knew nothing. And it was actually delightful to not know what I didn't know. Took the pressure off. And every year I've added a little bit of expertise, and I've been able to help our families a little bit better. And if I don't know the answer to their question, I at least can begin to know where to look for that answer. In order to become a resource for families with questions, I must become a student of the vast process of college admissions. So I read constantly. I attend conferences, and I have a network of colleagues whom I can call upon for their expertise. The third R is routines. I found it very effective from year one to systematize some of the processes that we do annually and to create methodologies so that every year it's consistent and every year our students know what to expect and our processes remain the same. So the first year of my job, I created a lot of forms for the students to fill out, forms that will help our teachers write letters of recommendation, forms that will help our colleges understand our school better. I thought deeply about how we could create processes to remove errors that were currently happening in our application process as we submitted things to colleges. And I tried to create processes to eliminate those errors, or at least reduce them. I created timelines, and I've created checklists and workshops for my students. And while some of these students roll their eyes and think they're doing busy work, they have seen that all this the forms are helping them. The number one thing that students forget is their passwords for their college login, their logins for their college applications. So at 10 o'clock at night, I'll get a text that says, "Mrs. Gibson, what's my password?" And because I had them fill out a form earlier, I can just whip it out and remind them of what it is that they should have written down back in September. But it helps, and I appreciate being able to do that. And I've made a schedule of the responsibilities that I do for the entire year, which is one of the handouts I've given you. This job is, interestingly, very season-sensitive. That is, some tasks must be done in the fall, other tasks must be done in the spring, but every year, it's very much the same seasonal expectations. So I can pretty much follow that calendar and know that I'm not missing any steps. Well, I want to talk now about a very important tool that I've created and use constantly, and it's called the school profile. And I'm wondering, just in my knowledge of your schools, how many of your schools already have a school profile and know about this? Okay. And how many of you have never heard of a school profile and don't have one? Okay, great. I just wanted to kind of understand that. Well, one of the most important tools that I have created the first year of my job is something called the school profile. This is a national kind of document that colleges are used to receiving from high schools. Why is the profile an important tool? Because your school has a story to tell, and the school profile is the tool to tell that story. It is a 4-page synopsis of your school, and it is to convey the most important aspects of your school in a very concise way. So who's going to read your school profile? How is it used? Who are the audiences? Well, the profile's audience is varied. And the first, of course, are prospective colleges. The colleges use it as an understanding of a student's high school transcript. It puts the transcript into a context, gives them the understanding of the learning environment. It's also a tool to facilitate learning about our academic curriculum. And also the city that our school is in, the social context of the applicant, and the city that he or she is from. For instance, a very small rural school in the Pacific Northwest is quite different than an urban school in New England. And so the school profile helps the colleges to understand these different learning environments. Prospective families are also an audience. They use the school profile to really understand our school better and what kind of programs we offer and where our students are going to college and what kind of scores they're getting on their standardized tests. High school profiles may also be used for current students and parents, especially primary grades who are not very familiar with our secondary program yet. And they use the school profile to kind of see what the next step is for their student as they enter high school. And then finally, we found that donors really enjoy reading our school profile, donors and potential donors to our school, because it gives them a tool to really keep up with some hard and fast data in a way that's very easy to read. So speaking of easy to read, I'm going to give you a couple of tips that are not on your handouts regarding the school profile. These are tips that I have learned at a national workshop, and these are tips that have come directly from the college admission officers themselves. They say that the profile is often scanned into their computers, and so it needs to be easy to read in black and white. They ask that we not use staples, because they just have to remove the staples. They ask that we not use photographs of our schools, because those don't scan very well. They ask that we would make our school profile on standard paper size and format it as a PDF file. They ask that the rule of thumb for the length of the school profile be 2 double-sided pages, or a total of 4 pages. So our school profile, we have kept to 4 pages. But what we've also done is added a 5th page of our reading list, and we call it an appendix to the profile. I know that many of your high schools are having your students read college-level original textbooks. The colleges want to know that. They are fascinated by that. That is a distinguishing part of classical education, that our students are reading Plato and Homer and the classic texts. So we give them a list from 9th through 12th grade of all the books that our students will be reading. Now, an average admission officer spends 15 seconds looking at a school profile. And so it needs to be easy to read and easy to find information and easy to navigate. So I truly recommend, if your school does not have a school profile, that you consider developing one. It is simply a 4-page document that tells your story. And we send out our school profile with every single official school transcript that goes to the college so that they get our transcript and they get our profile at the same time. And one is able to help them learn and decipher the other. At the end of your handouts on my slides, I've given you a link in case you're interested in reading the Oaks School Profile. So So that's on your last slide, and you're able to access that by going to that website and clicking on the resources. So what should be included in the profile? Well, I normally would not make a busy slide like this, but I didn't want you to have to sit there and jot down all these notes, so I wanted you to have it in your handout. And so I will just briefly go over these, but I mainly just wanted you to have the information. The profile is simply a synopsis of your school. It needs to have your contact information, especially for the counseling office. It helps to list your CEEB code. This is the code used for standardized testing and that the colleges use to find your high school. Often, it's helpful to give a brief overview of the school's mission statement and to give a little bit of history of the school's demographics, also maybe the median income of your city and community, again, to give them context. It helps to give the credentials of your faculty and explain how many teachers you have teaching and what the student-teacher ratio is. It's really important to explain our curriculum. Our classical curriculum is unique and distinguished and often very unfamiliar to certain colleges and universities. They are interested in also knowing what we might consider honors classes and AP classes. And the reason they care about those is that that often bears a lot of weight when they are awarding merit aid to the student to know how many honors classes you have. In fact, one of my students this year with a 3.1 GPA from our school, because of the number of honors classes he took at our school, the college reweighted his GPA in their internal system to a 3.6 and gave him another $8,000 in merit aid. So that was really important that I communicated the rigor of our school and the rigor of this student's course load. They really do often take a GPA from one school and a GPA of another, and depending on the rigor and the academic course load, they often do some internal reweighting of those GPAs and award merit aid based on the reweighting, which is why never worry if your school is on a 4.0 GPA scale, but a school down the street from you might be on a 4.3 GPA weighting scale. The colleges reweight those to make them apples to apples. So one is not more advantageous than the other. And I tell parents that all the time because we are on a 4.0 scale. It's important that you give the class sizes, that they understand your grading system, your ranking system, and your graduation requirements. Also, it helps to give some distinguishing characteristics of your school, kind of paint a picture of your culture in just a short paragraph. Maybe some of your favorite students' programs. We do a Civil War reenactment. We do a History Emphasis Week and protocol. And so we include those programs on the school profile. Now, we don't have cheerleading squads, student government, or key clubs, or a lot of the clubs that other schools have, because we just don't have the facility or the staff. But that's okay. The college will evaluate an applicant only based on the learning environment where they have come from. They don't compare our school to a larger school. They just look at what we do offer and how that student has taken advantage of what our school offers. They're very, very interested in GPA distribution. They would like to know, if you have a class of 20 students, are 14 of the students 4.0 students, or are three of them 4.0 students? They would like to kind of see a bell-shaped curve. They're kind of curious if we grade inflate or how difficult we are in our grading, and just how the student distribution kind of works out. They're very important in a matriculation list. They want to know where these students are being admitted to colleges. So we list every single school on our profile where our students have both been admitted and where they have matriculated. They are also interested in standardized test scores and national merit results, and the percentage of graduates per class matriculating to college. All this gives them a sense of the caliber of the students' learning environment at your school. So I realize I've gone through that list very quickly. But again, if you have more questions, you can talk to me afterwards, you can send me emails, or you can look at our own school profile on that link that I've given you. I see my role as a coach. I am coaching parents and students toward what I call fit and finish in the college search and admissions process. Both of these aspects, fit and finish, are incredibly important to their individual college experiences. I help direct families to search and explore colleges that are a fit. Now, what I mean by that is this. As Christian parents, we are called to think biblically about this next step and consider some questions. What is God's calling for my child? God calls different students to different tasks, and each calling requires unique preparation. So perhaps one of my students is called by God to go and try to get into the Ivy League schools, those bastions of secularism that have been really hijacked from where they initially were founded, on Christian principles. I like what Doug said today, that the secular state is standing because Christians are afraid to topple it. And so I don't ever promote one school over another, but some students are certainly convinced that God is calling them to an Ivy League school. And one of my students last year was admitted to Harvard, and he is flourishing there as a godly man. His faith has not wavered, and he's making an impact in that arena. I also encourage my students to visit the campuses to which they are applying. In the same way that you would never buy a car without test driving it, I tell parents, you should never choose a school without visiting it. Each college has a different feel about it when a student walks on the campus. I've seen students attend schools that have been a very good fit for them and other schools that have not been a good fit for them, and it has really affected their educational experience. And the fit of a given school is different for every student. I have two students who will go to a college at the same time, see all the same things. One will come away saying, that's a fit for me, I'm going to apply, and the other will say, that is absolutely, I can't see myself at that school at all. So it really is a unique thing for each student. So these are some of the questions that I ask families. I've divided this slide, again for your information, into two categories. A school needs to be a fit both educationally and environmentally. The environment has to be right, and the educational programs have to be a fit. So I ask families to think about, how well does the school prepare my child for God's unique calling? Does my child need specific programs, small classes, maybe some proactive advising? Does my child, would they benefit from unique research opportunities, internships, or study abroad programs? Does this school fit with our financial goals? Does it offer my student classes within a 4-year graduation window? Believe me, there are some schools that it's impossible, nearly impossible, to graduate in 4 years. Families just need to know that ahead of time, that they need to plan a budget for a 5-year college course if they're going to apply to that specific school. And does the school provide network and internship and career opportunities? And that's a really important factor in today's world where students are often hired through internships. The environment at the school is also just as critical when thinking about fit. How well does this school meet the spiritual, emotional, and social needs of my child? Would my child flourish in a Christian environment? Or are they able and willing to go and handle a secular environment? Would they flourish in a large university or a small college? Do they need to be close to home, or are they ready to go far away? Do they want to study with a single Christian worldview, or are they prepared to face several worldviews? Would a lecture style college be better for them, or would a tutorial style small one-on-one or group learning environment be better for their learning style? And finally, would my child's faith be strengthened or weakened in this environment? Is there Christian support? Are there Christian opportunities on campus and supportive professors? Would my child feel at home here for 4 years? And when families answer these questions, they get a real sense of a school's fit. And then they can start to make a prospective college list and really feel comfortable with the schools that their students are going to apply to. The second way I coach students is by helping them to create college applications that are finished. This means containing excellent content and presentation that strengthen their chances of admission. A student gets one shot to apply to a college, and once they hit that submit button online, they cannot make any changes. So the applicant's goal should be to create a coherent, well thought out application that sheds light on all the most important parts of their character, their academic background, and their goals. And it must be presented with excellence. That means no typos, correct information about our school, and that their essays really reflect who they are. And this is where I can really step in and help them as kind of a second set of eyes over their shoulder. I really see my job as a finishing contractor. And what we're building instead of a home is a college application. And my job is to attend to the details so that that application is submitted with excellence. Putting attention on the finish of every application that is submitted by an Oak student has actually made a real key difference in our school's reputation with colleges and universities across the country. When schools receive an application from the Oaks, they know that it will be, for the most part, as complete and correct and coherent as we can make it. And I know that this attention to finish, to the finishing details, has made a big difference both in our admission statistics and in our merit aid amounts for our students. So in conclusion, I decided to end by giving you 10 specific ways that I or anyone in my role can make an impact, a significant impact, both on your students and your school. Each of these points has a story behind it, but I won't go into a lot of details on some of them. First of all, sometimes one phone call to an admission officer can make the difference in a student being accepted to that university. And that's always a really rewarding phone call to make. Sometimes they just need a little more clarification or a little bit more background on the student, or they just need someone to cut through all the noise. So that's happened several times to me over the last 7 years. Students and parents often welcome an objective third party to stimulate dialogue about the next steps after high school. I can ask the questions that may be difficult for a parent to ask the student or the student to ask the parent. And I often can just sit back then and have them discuss. This is a fun one. A well-written letter can reap $10,000. I had a student 2 or 3 years ago who wanted to go to a culinary arts school. She did not want to take out student loans. And after all the financial aid was said and done, she was short $10,000. And she came into my office the last week before graduation while all of her other friends were talking about all the colleges that they were going to attend. And she said, "Mrs. Gibson, I can't make it work. This really is kind of the school of my dreams, but I cannot come up with this $10,000. Well, I happen to know of a philanthropist in Spokane who's a Rotarian, and I wrote him a letter on her behalf that day. I took a long time to write that letter, and I explained her situation and asked if he might be willing anonymously to fund her education for that first year for $10,000. And he wrote me back the next day and said, yes, I will do that. And I was able to invite her and her parents into my office just 2 days before graduation and tell her the funds are in place and you're able to go to the culinary school. And that same gentleman upped that pledge the second year. And so she was able to get through those first 2 years and then be able to afford the last two. My advocacy can move a student from the wait list to admission. And I've already talked about that one. I get to promote the value of a classical Christian education to colleges that are unfamiliar with the trivium. Students trained classically are in high demand. As I said before, colleges and employers want students like ours with integrity, with a moral compass, those who can think critically and speak persuasively. Our distinctives set us apart. Latin, logic, rhetoric, the ideas of ethos, pathos, and logos. It is a privilege for me to explain these distinctives to them. In some cases, I can direct a student to a college that will cost his family less than his high school tuition. And I have a binder in the back of a set of colleges called no-loan colleges. And if a family makes under a given certain income, this group of colleges has made a pledge that rather than offer the student loans, they will convert all those loans into free grant money. So we had a student attend a university in that group of schools, and he is paying less per year to go to that prestigious university with a cost of attendance, a sticker price of about $60,000. He's paying less than he did for a year at the Oaks. And I just want parents to understand this, that don't look at the sticker price, because that's not usually what you'll pay, and that there are many opportunities financially. I can help students obtain summer jobs and internships and job shadow opportunities because of my contacts within the community. I can advocate for the student who is the underdog. Maybe a student who started poorly in high school and their grades and their character are nothing to shout about, but they finished senior year strong, and I can help them advocate and tell their story. One of my students was expelled freshman year, but by senior year, he had made a huge turnaround in his character, his spiritual development, and his academic development. So I told him he had to own his story and write about why he was expelled, what he learned from that experience, and then I was able to come behind him with my letter of advocacy and say, yes, he really is someone that would be an advantage to have at your institution. And he was given several letters of admission. One of my students' grades plummeted her sophomore year because her mother passed away. The schools just need to understand what happened, why the sudden downturn in your GPA. And I'm able to help that student advocate and explain their story. Finally, a couple more, I can provide a fee waiver for college applications and standardized admission tests. These fee waivers are granted to anyone in my position as a guidance counselor at public and private classical high schools. And so funding never needs to be a detriment toward a student applying to a high school, to a college or taking a standardized test. And finally, I found that parents are grateful that my position allows me to coax their students in a way that can come alongside the parents. I can be the taskmaster and it puts the parents in the position of being coaches and cheerleaders. And this seems to be a great team strategy. So with that, I end my formal presentation, and I will take some questions. I thank you for attending. If you need to step out. And again, you can find our profile at that website, or you can contact me during this conference. So does anyone have any questions? And I will repeat them. Yes. Yes, I'm part of the National Association for College Admission Counseling, and you can Google it. It's called NACAC, N-A-C-A-C. Another question? Yes, in the orange. So the question is, what kind of assessment test do I use? And the wonderful thing about this is it's absolutely free. It's free to me and it's free to families. And it's based on the Myers-Briggs assessment. And it's a 70-question set of questions that the students find to be really fun to answer. And then I use it in conjunction with a book called Do What You Are. And it helps them to explore their temperament and some careers that fit that kind of temperament. What's the name of what?
The name of this test.
The name of the test, it's a book by Kiersey, K-I-E-R-S-E-Y, and it's called Know Your Temperament. And inside that book is the test. And I just use the same 70-question test. It takes about an hour. I sit down face-to-face with the students, and then we tally up the results right then. And then we use the second book that's in conjunction called Do What You Are. So it's been really helpful. Yes, question?
Do you ask because you obviously said we have 25 students that are graduating, that's a lot of time on your part, being that you're only working 20 hours a week. Do you ask the parents and students to write their own essays, if you will, and then after that, if they feel like they would like to have you look at it, you then look at it, or is it something that you ask everyone to give to you?
Great question. So she asked, how do I handle the essay portion for 25 students? I help them brainstorm questions, and I actually hold a boot camp where it's a three-day camp where they get practice writing essays. But then I definitely only edit the essays of the students who want to send it to me. I definitely don't do all of them. And a lot of them have parents who love to edit essays or other friends. And so, yes, I just take it on a case-by-case basis. Yes?
I've heard admission counselors say that they only want recommendations that are a page long, just a green second page. Have you got any feedback about two-page letters of recommendation?
Well, is Tom Sawyer still here from New St. Andrews? Okay. You know, frankly, that is really up to the college. The smaller colleges look at an applicant in a much more holistic way, and they have the time to read two pages. The public universities often don't even allow me to send any letter of recommendation. In fact, the University of Washington, which is the state I live in, says, don't send us a single letter of recommendation. We'll throw it away, and we will count it as a demerit against your student. So we take that instruction very carefully. But for the most part, they'll be pretty careful with explaining it. And that's another reason why I developed the relationships with the officers, so I understand, you know, what's your threshold? If I wrote two pages, would that be a burden or would that be helpful? Other questions? Yes, all right. Well, I appreciate you coming. Thank you very much.